Hello and welcome to the You Should Run podcast. I'm your host, Tony Heil, councilman in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, which is currently under quarantine, as is much of the state and much of the country. So I'm taking some time this weekend, these weeks, to record extra podcasts. Hopefully by the time you hear this, I'm able to get out the house more. But for today, I'm excited to talk to some new people from new states and areas of the country to share their experiences about running for office. If you've been listening to the past 50-plus episodes, you know I've had the good fortune of talking with people from over 25 states across the country and from different offices. And so my goal now has been to talk with people in every state about their experiences as a candidate or as someone who has gotten involved in politics to encourage others to run for office. Please look back at past episodes for people from mayors, including a recent one with the mayor of Providence, Rhode Island, all the way up to members of Congress, and like my congressman, Madeline Dean, and my senator, Bob Casey. But my goal now has been to talk to someone from every state, and it's amazing that there are some states that I will get to later that you would think I'd get to earlier before this one, which is the state of Wyoming. I think the last state, alphabetically, we'll find that out today. And my guest is Marcy Kindred, who's going to talk about her experiences there. So, Marcy, thank you for taking time on your Sunday to talk on my podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
So, as I said, I think that Wyoming is a state where people just kind of know it's there. They know it's square. And so they're not very aware, to be alliterative. Tell me about...
This is true.
Tell me about Wyoming. I don't know anything about Wyoming aside from... It's big, and I can find it on a map because it's an easy shape.
Yeah, it's definitely big spatial-wise, but population, I think you mentioned that our entire state is less than your county? Is that what you said?
Yes, my county has roughly 800,000 people, I think. Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, it's got major metropolitan areas, like right outside of Philadelphia, so I imagine that... You know, I'm right next to King of Prussia, which is tons of history and a growing place. So, yeah, we have a lot of people in a much smaller bit of space than you do.
That's one of the best things about Wyoming. The wide open prairies, you should see our sunsets, they're fantastic. But you did say that people know it's there, they know it's square. But I gotta say, some people don't even know we're here. I feel like we're kind of an anomaly. They're like, Wyoming, is that in the United States? Yes, it is. It is the last alphabetically, yes. And it is one of the reddest states in the nation, for sure.
And it's interesting to me as things become more red or blue in terms of Democrats or Republicans that... I've been involved in politics or aware of it for 20 plus years and more longer than that in terms of paying attention. And to me, what a Republican means, what a Democrat means, isn't exactly the same as it was 20 years ago. And maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like...
Oh, I agree.
You know, and I remember 20 years ago when George Bush ran for president, he was all about free trade and opening borders and all this stuff. And that is definitely not the Republican Party today. Have you noticed a change, even though it's been Republican, have you noticed a shift in what the politics is in Wyoming?
You know, I think there's less of a shift overall. I think there are some very loud members of parties that create narratives and stories that this is what Wyoming is, and we're only one thing, we're Republican, we're hard-nosed, we're lift yourself up by your bootstraps. But the more involved I've become in local politics, I really think a lot of it's story. I mean, they are loud, and they are the majority of our representation, like in our legislature, in our governing bodies, but... The people here tend to be more moderate. I mean, I don't know if I can speak like overall. In my experience, it's less scary. When I first started running, like I was like, oh man, I'm such a minority. I'm a woman, I'm a Democrat, both very low representation in our legislature, but it hasn't proved to be as big of an issue as I thought originally, which is a wonderful surprise.
You know, I have paid attention to different people on what they call election Twitter, hashtag election Twitter.
Okay.
And they're talking about a number of retiring senators or people who might retire. And they're talking about the senators in Wyoming who are Republican and conservative, and that, but the people that replace them are likely to be more outside of the national mainstream than the senators you have now. Does that seem to make sense that, like, you know, they're people that wouldn't win an election in Massachusetts or California, but the people that are going to potentially replace those legislators there may be even more to the fringe than people see today?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't... Like I said, they're the louder ones. They're the ones stepping up to the plate. They're the ones running. It is concerning. That's part of why I decided I needed to run, even at a lower level, because I feel like it's just a very strong narrative. And as it becomes louder, Democrats... or even like moderate Republicans are like shrinking, shrinking away and silencing themselves. And I often think of, I have children. So I often think of the children's book, Horton Hears a Who. Are you familiar?
Yeah.
The part where he's like trying to tell everyone like, no, they're here. They're here. And all of the who's in Whoville are shouting together like, no, we are here, we are here. Like, I want to motivate like all of the Democrats and like moderate Republicans, Democrats across the board, like, no, we have to step up, or these people who are not representing our voices will be the only ones heard. So step up as you are right now, because it's it's a necessity. That's kind of how I feel.
So you have stepped up. You are running for the state legislature, and you're going into this knowing that, barring some insanity, though right now the world is crazy, regardless of politics, it's just a crazy time, you know, you would likely be in the minority in the legislature. So what was it that set you off that said, you know what, I need to get out there and run for this office? This is important to me.
Well, in 2018, I helped with some runs for office that I was really excited about and supported, and I felt like I was doing my part in like helping to get them elected. And but they were few and far in between. And thinking about the future of like, okay, now what's next? Who are we going to support next? What grassroots can I support next? There wasn't a lot. That's our problem. People aren't running. In Wyoming, we have, the highest number of uncontested races in the nation. And that's the main problem. Like,
yes.
As much as I felt completely unqualified, like, hadn't necessarily, like, this didn't seem like the right time for me to run for office. I just started my real estate career, just barely like clawing my way out of poverty, actually, in fact, just barely on the other side of that, one disaster away from slipping right back into it. But the options of getting involved were slim. So I decided to run. Like, if there isn't another candidate that I'm excited to support, then you got to step up. You got to do it. We're gonna do it, and that's kind of how I ended up here.
I think that's a great reason. That was the reason I started this podcast in general. Is in 2018, my son, who was then 4, now 6, so we're making videos about why people should vote, and that's an easy thing to tell people to do. Hopefully, but then I realized there are so many uncontested races. There's 500,000 elected offices in this country. And when you consider the size of the population, it starts to make sense. But a lot of those there's either no good candidate or there's no candidate, especially no Democrat running, and that hurts the ticket up and down, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it makes our elected officials, who are they accountable to if they're not even worried about next election? Like, they get to do whatever they want. It's dangerous on either side of the ticket.
Right.
Like, uncontested races, that's a failure in democracy, you know? So I believe in this country. I love this country. I believe in this country, the state. I think our shortfall is, like, the lack of participation locally. There's a lot of focus on national levels, and I've even fallen prey to that. Everybody did in the 2016 election, right?
Right.
After the 2016 presidential election, I did kind of a step back and, like, whoa, like, what went wrong? How can we make a difference? Because in Wyoming, like, the presidential race, we know where our vote's going. Mm-hmm. And so, like, what can we do here locally? And that's where I really started getting involved with local politics. And yeah, part of my race, win or lose, like, I just want to motivate my generation. I'm a mom. I'm a young mom with a business. And, like, those people, we need to be involved at every level. That's part of my run, part of my platform. Like, just get involved. Go to city council meetings. Go to legislative meetings. Like, give public testimony. Care. We have to care.
Yeah, I talked with a state representative from Rhode Island, very different from Wyoming, at least, you know, they're both above the Mason-Dixon line, but, and they're both
yes.
kind of square. No, I guess it's more rectangular. But so, and Gail Golden was talking about those hearings can bring a lot out because they're hearing from people, your stories and testimony can make a big difference. But, you know, the issues...
Absolutely.
The issues in Wyoming are a lot different than the issues in Rhode Island, I assume.
Yes. I mean, I don't know a whole lot of issues in Rhode Island. I think a lot of issues in Wyoming are very different from the rest of the world, really. We're quite isolated here. Very rural. But to your point of, like, those committee meetings, giving public testimony, I recently gave public testimony at a hearing for Medicaid expansion, and I gave a very personal testimony about, like, my family. Like, three of my four children were born, my pregnancies were covered by Medicaid. Like, it's a huge issue to me, very important to me, and now my testimony was, like, now I'm a up-and-coming real estate agent, and I'm contributing to this community, and Medicaid was part of that, and kind of changing the story that goes around about people on Medicaid and being helped by those government programs. And one of the council members, committee members, even said, like, referred to my testimony before giving his vote, and he's like, I'd really like to hear from more people like that. I'd really like to hear from those stories of people who have benefited from these programs. I think that could be really helpful. And his vote did change from nay to A. And I wanted to scream, like, those people are at their second jobs. Like,
right.
They don't have time. And, yeah, just more and more collectively, like, it just seemed like I have to be that voice. I want to represent those people that can't be there, that those single mamas that are going to their second jobs or can't get childcare to come and give public testimony. You know what I mean?
Oh, I totally understand. I have, I'm married and we have two kids, and there's times, especially now with this quarantine business going on, where I know that my life is flexible. I can work from home. My wife
yep.
is wonderful. She has to work from home too, because everything's quarantined right now, but she put up a whole schedule so class can still go on for our kids while we both work, so we go off and do that. So as
yeah.
challenging as something like this is for us,
yeah,
we'll handle it. We'll manage
yeah.
it. And yet I know, as an elected official, I have so many neighbors who I'm sure are doing far worse and worried as a parent, especially if they're a single parent, mom or dad. I imagine for this is how you feel, too. I don't understand the lack of empathy that people have for that, because just thinking about it for a minute feels so stark.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's hard to have empathy for something you have never experienced. And I do think that's maybe one of my strong suits, is like sitting down with people I may not agree with, but trying to meet them halfway and trying to get them to maybe look at things from a different angle. I'll tell you a little backstory. So I have four boys, all under the age of 12. My two oldest, I co-parent with my ex-husband, who is my ideological opposite. He is already has his Trump 2020 hat. His family refers to Glenn Beck. Do you know Glenn Beck?
Yes, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. So their whole family refers to Glenn Beck as Uncle Glenn.
Oh, like, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, that just gives a kind of a picture of what I'm co-parenting with. But I got to tell you, man, we co-parent very well. We do a great job. We are friends. We disagree on almost everything, but we put our kids first. That's always our be all end all. It's how we get through some of the hard things. There's a lot of tears. There's a lot of arguments, but it always comes back to, we both want what's best for our kids. And I really do think that being a Democrat in Wyoming, that prepares me to be a good legislator, to be able to sit down with people that agree with nothing that I stand for, that I believe, and try and like come to the table as opponents and leave as co-sponsors. That's my goal. That's my wheelhouse. Really what I want to do is just like, there's just so much noise out there. And I think the majority of people are just ready to be heard and be listened to. And that can go a long way.
It worries me so much when I see this insanity from people like Glenn Beck. And from what I understand, I may be wrong. He may be one of the saner people on the right when it comes to this virus. I don't know. Because some people are less dangerous. But,
yeah.
You know, there was a poll out today. I'm recording this on the St. Patrick's Day weekend. And yes. I don't know what day this is going up because I don't know the future. But, So, where, like, 60% of Democrats were, like, talking about self-quarantining and staying out from parties and things, and only 30% of Republicans were, I go on social media, I see a bunch of people who are like, it's not that big of a deal. My neighbor, who's a big Trump fan, was, like, telling me it was overblown. I'm like, the NBA isn't going to postpone the rest of its season and give up billions of dollars over a hoax, like, this is serious. How, like, people will get hurt by this insanity.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard. It's a daily struggle. So I'm co-parenting with that person. And so, although he definitely has come to the same conclusion. He's a little more, with the pandemic issue, reasonable. But yeah. Yeah,
doesn't that sound crazy in a way, like, well, he's reasonable when it comes to the pandemic?
Yeah. No, but here's the thing. I think on both sides, and especially, and if it has to be us, if it's the Democrats that do it, then so be it. I'm willing to be that person that refuses to lose the humanity of the other side.
Yeah.
Because my boys love their dad, and mm-hmm. I want them to love their dad, and they're 12 and 11 years old. And so their dad's like their hero. And so I plan on running a campaign that never makes them feel uncomfortable about, like, oh, there's, she's talking about my dad, like, in a negative light, like that, which I wish all politics could go back to. Everybody's tired of being told who to hate and what to fear, and like, let's bring back the humanity to politics.
Yeah, my neighbor may have said what he said about it, but I don't want him or his family to be hurt. Like, it's one thing if he's like, I'm going to buy another gun, and I'm like, I'm not really into guns, but you guys don't have you guys are safe. I know what you do. But I don't want you to get a disease that will kill you.
So,
you know, people look at Wyoming, they think about it being, you know, a person every 50 miles or so. But your district isn't like that, right? I was looking up your race, and so your district that you're running in may be a little bit easier to run in terms of getting places than some other places, right?
Yes, yes. So that was considered when I, because I wanted to run for office. I wasn't sure for what. I did look into the number, like, is this a winnable district? There are, like, districts in Cheyenne. I'm in the capital state, the capital city, that have been deemed like very highly improbable, like unlikely that a Democrat could win, more the rural areas. I am in kind of the old, historic homes, downtown Cheyenne, and it has been purple at different times throughout history. There is a possibility of winning. That being said, there hasn't been a Democrat in any of the offices for, I think, close to 15 years. The current representative is an 11-year incumbent, chair of appropriations. He has been around. He has a lot of power. I'm 100% the underdog, but we have hope. I have a lot of hope. I don't think my opponent is too worried, because he hasn't had to be with anybody who's ran, and people have ran great campaigns. But at the very least, I plan on giving him a run for his money. I want him to know that he is accountable to his district. And if not, we're coming.
Yeah, I remember the 1994 wave when Democrats had held the House of Representatives for 40 years or so. For many, many years, it seemed impossible for Republicans to win. And because of the trends and a lot of Democrats in Congress who had basically just assumed that they would win and just didn't really have a lot of community outreach for that, they got beaten by people who should never have won, and not because of ideology. I can't name any specific races, but because they should have not have a chance to win. But you had people, Democrats at that time, who hadn't been active in the community, and that led to what happened. I assume that's kind of what you're looking for in your race, and maybe the other people across the country may see as well if they attempt to run for office.
Yeah. I do. I think there's a real energy, even here in Wyoming, in Cheyenne. Our local party has been energized more so than it has for years. There's a lot more youth participation. I'm excited. I think it's an exciting time to be running for office as a Democrat in Wyoming, honestly.
And your top issue, I understand, is probably Medicaid expansion and healthcare, or are there other things that are most important that may be unique
to you? Healthcare is huge. Mm-hmm. There's also, Wyoming is experiencing what we call the brain drain. Mm-hmm. Our youth are leaving. I don't know if you're familiar with the term. Our youth go to our fantastic college, University of Wyoming, and then they leave because they need opportunities, and really the main thing that's kept us viable here is coal and oil. And especially now that that market is tanking, there's just not a whole lot of opportunity for growth for that age range, so they leave. And I have four boys going through Wyoming school system, which is fantastic, by the way, one of our crowning jewels. And I don't want them to come visit me on Christmas. Like, I want them to stay here for their kids to become fourth and fifth generation Wyomingites. I would like them to stick around. So, yeah, I definitely, youth retention tied into our education. Wyoming has one of the best education systems in the nation, and it is consistently on the chopping block for budget cuts as our main source of revenue kind of tanks. We got to find more ways to make money before we start cutting our education. Continue to cut our education. We already are.
So you want more youth retention, and I just talked with a state representative in South Dakota who was talking about this as well in her area, in her state. What do you think would work to get people to go to good schools in Wyoming? And I'm glad there's good schools there. And then stay in the state. What kind of ideas might you have for that?
I think tourism is a great option for alternate revenue streams, which will open more opportunities. I'm not very well versed in technology, but we have a great school here in town called Array that just started a fantastic apprenticeship for coding and really cutting edge stuff, and more investment into that, into green energy, investing in alternate revenue streams, and which will in turn broaden our opportunities for our youth to stay around, to stick around.
Great. I think that is, especially as you said, if there's not a lot of confidence that oil can produce the revenue that you need, being able to vary the economic options is very important, especially with bringing in talented new college graduates.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's been really frustrating to watch the legislature they're just trying to squeeze every last cent out of that coal and oil and all, yeah, and it's, for the past few years, it's been the war on coal, the war on coal. Like, I'm not really interested in debating that, at this point, you mm-hmm. know? It's more the markets have spoken. I don't care where you're at on climate change. I don't care where you're at on, if I can't have those discussions with you, let's just look at the market. People aren't buying what we're selling. And we have done nothing to bring in different sources of revenue. And we just finished up with a budget session, and all of the bills that explored other options of revenue streams died. And all the ones that made it through were just ways to just eke out just a little bit more from this dying industry.
Then when you finally do try and get revenue from other things, you're going to have to get even more than trying to get, instead of having to get 1% from that now, you'll have to get 2 or 5 or 10% because you have to make up for the loss later.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're facing a crisis, really. And I'm worried that if we don't get some other voices at the table, we'll try to fix it, but it's going to be fixing it instead of preventative, instead of planning ahead. It's going to be oh crap, what are we going to do? I don't want to get to that point, but we're real close. We've already lost a lot of time and a lot of opportunity, and we're going to be making decisions in crisis mode, which is never great.
And that seems to be where we are as a planet now and as a country. So
yes,
you can see what that does. So finally, it's You Should Run. That's the theme of the podcast. You seem very positive and optimistic, even with potentially big challenges, both electorally and governmentally. Is that, if that's a word?
What? I make up words all the time. You'll have to do a fact check at the end and be like, all the words that Marcy said wrong and all the words that I said wrong.
As long as the important facts are right.
Yeah.
But what would your encouraging lesson be based on your experience for people to run, especially in places like Wyoming and, like I said, South Dakota and other places where they may feel like their voice is too small? Why should people run in these areas?
Oh, man, I could talk about this all day. I think it's important to take the ego out of it, to do it for the right reasons, which is we need to be represented. Even in the supermajority states, just a campaign run, win or lose, running a campaign will get your voice out. And it's not just your voice. You're representing a whole group of people who are not currently being heard in these places that we're at. And it's so important for people to see and relate to. I mean, think about the youth. Like, if they can't see themselves running for office, they're never going to do it. It's not about like each individual race. So let's say I run and I lose. That doesn't mean that I didn't start the momentum for the person who comes behind me and runs and wins. Like, this is long-term. I constantly am talking about, like, we're in this for the long haul. We're not just trying to win a seat. We're trying to encourage positivity, kindness. Like, we're all running for the right reasons, for our people, to represent the people whose voices aren't being heard. We're in this for the long haul. You've got to run as you are. I am definitely, by current or whoever made the standards for you should run for office, I don't meet any of them. I don't have a war chest of funding. Like I said before, like we just barely crawled out of poverty ourselves. My name does not sit on the sign of law firms or here in Wyoming, cattle ranches. There's a lot of ranchers in our legislature. And my voice still matters because there are still people that I am representing that are not currently being heard. Run as you are, not just to win, but just to inspire change and hope and kindness and love. Honestly, that sounds hibbity-dibbity, but like, that's what I'm all about.
No, that's a very good reason. That's why people should do it. To add a little bit of hope from Pennsylvania, you know, I'm in the Philly area, which is, you can't not win as a Democrat. I mean, you can only win as a Democrat in the city of Philadelphia, but,
okay.
And you know, there's people talk about Pittsburgh and Philadelphia and Alabama in between. And we have Lancaster, which is trending blue, but we had a great woman who ran for Congress in 2018, Jess King. She was on my podcast months ago, but she didn't win. She ran a really aggressive, really hopeful campaign. Sounds a lot like the same issues and tactics you're using. So she didn't win, but people who were part of her campaign did run and have won since then for other offices. And they would not have been engaged had it not been for Jess. And I'm hopeful for you and for Wyoming that, one, I hope that you can win. Obviously, I'm not endorsing anyone, but... Yeah. But
I plan on it. That's yes. The plan.
But hopefully you can encourage other people to see that, and that can be a change that takes 5, 10, 20 years.
Yeah. And if the world needs anything right now, it's positive people knocking on doors. And like, I am so excited to meet my neighborhood, to get out there and just like check in on everyone. We're so isolated and everyone's in their bubbles, and
well, we're literally isolated right now, Marcy.
Yeah, okay. We're not gonna be knocking doors for a few weeks, but come summer, right? Isn't that when the virus is supposed to not spread? But yeah, I just We need a little more positivity and hope. And I hope this campaign can do that.
Well, I hope so, too. I appreciate you providing some hope on this podcast today, and I wish you the best of luck for the campaign and for bringing that hope to Wyoming. If people are interested in following you more and learning about Wyoming, what should they do? What social media should they follow?
Absolutely. I am on Facebook, Marcy Kindred for Wyoming House District 8. You can also find a link to my Facebook from my website, kindredforwyoming.com.
Great. I hope everyone looks into it. Don't just think about your area. Think about the country and the world. Some of these districts don't need $100,000 or 100,000 people to win. It takes only a few, and it takes a few people to run as well. Thank you so much, Marcy. Best of luck in Wyoming.
Thanks. You too. Hey, stay safe.
I will do my best.
Good luck with quarantine with two kids.
Okay.
Pray for me and my four.
Hopefully by the time this is uploaded and it's out in the world, we'll be in a much better place.
Yes.